Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Semaphore Uncut, a podcast for developers about building great products. In this new episode, Darko, our podcast host, welcomes tech writer and DevRel Fernando Doglio. Fernando shares his insights on the essential skills of a successful software engineer. We'll delve into his two decades of experience in software development and explore his latest book, as well as his thoughts on software testing and AI-assisted programming. I hope you enjoy this new episode. Now let's dive in.
Hello. Today with us, we have Fernando Doglio. Fernando, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you please just go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Fernando. I've been a developer for the last 20 years or so. I started working as a web developer. I eventually moved into different roles, entered the big data area, also fell in love with it, did a lot of data architecture and systems architecture, and eventually did the jump into DevRel, which is my current role. That's because I, throughout my whole career, I've also been a fan of writing, especially writing articles. I've written also a couple of books. And I've, in that whole process, during those 20 years, I kind of decided that I really liked the idea of connecting with developers and trying to help them and whatever they're trying to do. So
at Semaphore, we're all about helping startups and growing businesses achieve their goals. We're introducing the startup and scale-up plans, which come with a per-seat fee, ensuring that we continue providing the additional value that our users expect. These plans come packed with several new features that were previously only available on our enterprise plan, such as new machines with faster CPUs and double the RAM and disk space, self-hosted agents for easy auto-scaling and complete control, metrics and insights for improved build performance over time, streamline releases with powerful deployment controls, and much more. Head over to semaphoreci.com/pricing for more information, and happy building.
As you already mentioned, you've written actually quite a few books, and your latest one, if I'm not mistaken, is Skills of a Successful Software Engineer. Can you guide us how you got interested into this topic as a whole specifically, and then also through the book?
Before the book, I wrote an article covering like 9 lessons I learned through my 20 years of experience. And that article actually got a great reception from people, from developers. A lot of people actually saying, I wish I had those advices when I started and things like that. So I guess that got the attention of some of the editors at Manning, and they reached out to me with the idea of turning that article into a book, essentially. The book is not going to be a step-by-step guide on, you know, how to become a developer or anything like that. But instead, it gives you, I think, at least that was my aim, it sets the right expectations for the type of career that we have as developers. It tells you what you should aim for, or staying away from the very technical aspects of, you know, you should learn JavaScript because of this, or you should learn Python because of this. That's not the aim of it. Instead, you should focus on how you write your code, and, you know, what's your aim when you're writing a code, and the process to follow. I do have some, I think it's a couple of chapters where I go into more technical details and discuss things like unit testing, because they're very fundamental to everything that we do. So I do cover them, but I also cover things like what to expect from a technical interview, what to look forward for on a offer from a company, what to ignore, you know, what are some of the red flags that you should be looking for. The book should give you some ideas of what to focus on when trying to come through the, you know, sea of topics that you could potentially learn about online, and up to the point of saying, well, eventually I want to lead a team.
In my first, you know, university course at the very beginning of the century, when we were learning Pascal, if in the first couple of weeks someone introduced the whole class to the concept of testing code, writing automated tests, I think the whole generation of students would be, you know, a couple of years ahead throughout the whole university, and then also at the very beginning of their career. So I'm happy that I see that you have included it so early in the book, and you see it as very important. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it has to be covered because, one, it's really fundamental to everything that we do. You write code because you wrote the code. Your base assumption is that it works. And yes, you can test it here and there and say, well, you know, I found a bug and here I fixed it. But we're all humans, and the basic idea of thinking that you've covered every aspect of your code and the logic around it, and that you know for sure, for certain, that it's going to work every time, it's just foolishness. So the idea of this chapter is to, one, show you that you're wrong. You can't possibly know that for sure without actually having some kind of formal test. And unit testing, I think, that gives you a way to do that practically without going all math and logic and trying to formally test your code, which is impractical. But it gives you the reasons why it's important. Not just, I also cover things like dependency injection, mock stubs, spies, and things, you know, tools, practical tools that you use throughout your testing career, let's put it that way. But I also try to focus on the fact that testing is important and the reasons why that is, and so that you're not just learning about tools or about your words, but you're also trying to understand that the concept of testing is fundamental and it should be everywhere, even though it doesn't happen on every project, it doesn't happen in every company, but at least you as a developer should try to push for that.
Can there be a successful software engineering company today and where developers are not writing tests?
Well, in practice, it's very relative. You know, if you're talking about a company that just gets started, you know, an early stage startup, that they're trying to get their product out and get, you know, market fee, for instance, there is a rush to try to prove a point, to try to get the functionalities and get people using it. Yes, clearly having the time and manpower to also worry about the quality of the code and the quality of the product, it would be amazing. But hardly, you know, that ever happens. Usually that team is composed of very focused and very few developers who have very little time to do anything other than either fixing a critical bug or adding a missing feature because you don't have time. If that happens, I guess it's justified that you don't have unit testing or any kind of quality control around your code. But if you want to scale, if you want your product to grow and stay alive, let's put it that way, over time, you definitely need it. I mean, you can't go that way because the fact that you don't have unit tests is actively creating technical debt. We understand that. I mean, you're putting a pin on all potential problems that you have and you don't know about, and you're saying, I'll tackle them later. That later will eventually come if your product is successful, and if it keeps growing and the code base keeps growing, that's going to be a huge snowball that's going to eat you alive. So the only sensible answer to or solution to that is, yes, you eventually have to have unit tests, or if it's not just unit tests, maybe you need some unit tests and then integration tests and then, you know, whatever other quality control you may have. But you do have, especially because they're automated, because, you know, you don't have to spend time retesting things. You know, you can have eventually you could also have like a full quality control team of people just dedicated to testing your product. But, you know, doing regression tests and so on, it takes also time. Unit tests, they're just running seconds, or maybe it depends on maybe some in under minutes. But the point is, you don't have to spend hours doing them. So they're necessary to any product that wants to grow and scale, definitely.
In recent couple of months, feels like almost days, we have this ChatGPT plus Copilot in GitHub that has been around for a while, but now there is a GPT, I think, 4 powered version also. And it's really making, you know, a huge impact on the, let's say, civilization.
yes, not just the IT industry, absolutely.
Yeah. It feels that it could be also a chapter of this book, or as you mentioned, a book on its own. So yeah, would love to hear your thoughts on that.
This is not ChatGPT in particular, but the type of tool that we've seen come up with around it, they're going to stay. I mean, we're looking at this birth, if you will, of a new kind of developer, the AI-assisted developer. The question I ask myself always is, if I'm writing an application, if I'm writing code, why do I have to type every single word if I can just tell the AI, you know, this is what I want, and the AI will give me the code? Granted, right now, the current state is that the code may or may not work. It may or may not have, you know, some bugs, and you have to, as a developer, review it and make sure that it does what you want it to do. I mean, if the ask is simple enough, chances are, almost 100% of the time, you'll get what you want. If the ask or, the problem you're trying to solve is more complex, then the solution may not be perfect. But it will get you, give you some head start, which is also why it's so useful. If you think about writing code and you have declarative versus imperative, and a lot of people years ago, imperative was the way. And eventually all the tools started to make, or libraries or, the languages started to evolve and grow in and move up on abstraction levels. And we started talking about declarative programming. In essence, you write code that describes what you want to achieve without actually saying this, writing the steps. The classic example is writing a map, statement versus a for statement where you have to think about the actual, the index and what happens on every iteration and so on. You can think of about these tools as a new level up above declarative programming. You literally tell the computer what you want without thinking about code, and the code comes your way. And now it comes your way. I mean, there are tools already that are actually writing it and compiling it for you. So this is definitely the way things are going. ChatGPT was the first one to successfully do it. It doesn't mean it's going to grow into being the, be all of software development. I don't think it's going to be the only tool that we're going to be using. There are already open source alternatives out there that you can run on your computer with obviously not exact same results. But, if you focus, you narrow the focus of those tools to one particular task or one particular area of expertise, then you can probably get close enough.
Microservices architecture is all the rage these days. But do you know what it really means and how to implement it to empower your teams to make the best decision for the problem at hand? On the Semaphore blog, you can learn about microservices and how to take advantage of features like test reports, on a repo, and Docker support to build, test, and deploy your microservice application at scale. Head over to semaphoreci.com/blog for more information. And happy reading!
It's obviously developing at a very, very rapid pace, so it's impossible to predict even the next couple of months, not a year. But what are the use cases when it's good, when it's useful, and what is something which is not there yet?
I think that instead of looking at the use cases, it's more important to think about the way you ask for whatever you want it to do. So essentially prompting. A lot of people are calling themselves prompt engineering or whatever. I don't know if that's fair, but the thing is, it's true with ChatGPT, and it's also true with all, DALL-E and all the other AI, generative AIs. The way you prompt it is directly related to the output you get. This is sometimes you get results that make you wonder, is there really a person the other way? But you have to remember, this is a piece of software, and it's far from perfect and far from, being the true AI that we dream up in the books and movies. So there are some limitations to what it understands and how it understands your requests. So if you want to build, you can actually build anything. I build a product online using it as an assistant, but you don't say, I want to build this application with this, and these are all the requirements I have. Just give me the code. That's going to be just too much for it. There are limitations to the number of characters it can give you, the number of characters it can read. So it's not going to be practical. It's going to lose context, especially with the code, within the code and so on. So, but you can use it as an assistant. You can use it as another developer to bounce ideas off of. You say architecture. You can definitely start discussing architecture with it and say, well, this is what I want to write. This is the proc I want to create. You as a developer probably have some ideas of probably the architecture you want to tackle, or say, I want to do it fast. What would be the architecture that you suggest? It's not going to give you the code to write the application, but it's going to give you some suggestions and reasons why one particular architecture is better than the other. And then you can start saying, well, now you have an API. I want an endpoint to process data. A form, a signup form, for instance. Just give me the code using Next.js. And you have a code. You can then tweak it, but it's going to be there. You can say, I want the front end for the signup form, and I want it to have this and these elements, and just this button, these fields, and you can even say, just style it using Bootstrap or style it using Table. It will give you the code to do that. you probably have to make it look nicer or better or whatever, but it's there to facilitate the code for you. And even, you know, if either a piece of code you wrote or a piece of code it gave you doesn't work, you can also tell it, you know, the sign-up form doesn't work because it's not, I don't know, it's giving me this error, or when I click it, nothing happened. And it'll try to solve it, it'll try to troubleshoot the problem and give you a solution. So for our industry in particular, I don't see really a use case that it wouldn't be useful for, unless, of course, you are thinking about giving it, you know, proprietary code or things like that. Because there is also, you have to remember that, and the guys at OpenAI are very open about it. Everything that you input is going to be used for their research. This is a research project. We have to remember that this is a toy that we're using to create software with. So whatever you give them may be used in a way that, you know, it shouldn't have. So the only use case I would advise, I guess, is that, is, you know, trying to share code with it to troubleshoot problems or whatever that is proprietary, that you should not be sharing it with anyone outside your company, then probably don't use ChatGPT. But other than that, if you can figure out a way to say, well, I'm writing code, or, you know, I have this function without giving it the code, and this is a problem I'm having, it will try to give you potential solutions.
Developers could become, in a way, orchestrators of...
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see that as a bad thing either. You can look at it as a, you know, evolution of our work, of our job. We've seen the evolution of many languages. We've seen the evolution of many ways of coding, many different paradigms that have come in the past and then got replaced by others that allow us to build better software with less work. Tools, frameworks, yeah, they're coming out every day. And the ideal scenario is that you write less code, just specify a few things, and you have your product, you have your function or whatever. Then this is the, not ultimate, but, you know, very, you know, like we kind of chomped. And I think that's why we also, some people are skeptical about it, but we probably skipped a few steps, but we got to a point where we're saying we got what we wanted. We're not writing code anymore. We're not thinking about code. We're orchestrated, like you said. The code is the output because, you know, it's needed. But I think that probably in a few years, we're not going to be even looking at the code.
You mentioned a book on this topic that, you know, you're thinking and planning to write. Can you give us some pointers where people can, you know, follow your work, find more about your upcoming books and so on?
Yeah, so kind of as a natural evolution to the book you mentioned, I've been talking with Manin about potentially creating a book around... not specifically ChatGPT, but around the, you know, large language models and all the similar tools that developers can use to incorporate AI-assisted techniques, let's call them, to their workflow, to make sure that they don't fall behind, to make sure that they can improve their workflow, their performance on the aspect of how fast or how much code they can produce in as little time as possible. So again, I'm currently in the phase of just discussing these things with the publisher. We still need to iron out a few topics before we can actually start producing content around it. But if you want to stay updated, if you want to know what I'm working on, I am on Twitter. I'm trying to be as active as possible there. My handle is at deleteman123. I'm also very active on medium.com. I publish all my articles there. You can just look me up for my name there. I'll show up. And yeah, mostly there. I mean, I have a newsletter that you can, but if you go to my Twitter or any article, you'll see it there and you can subscribe.
That's great. Thank you for all the hard work you have put into the book so far.
Thank you for having me. It was great. Thank you.
What a great conversation. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. Make sure to subscribe to Semaphore Uncut on your podcast player of choice so that you don't miss our new episodes. And stay tuned.